Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks for joining us today. We have a great conversation lined up ahead of us. Ever wondered how you can, ever give thought to how technology is useful for families or maybe how technology can get in the way of being a family? How can we use it for good rather than allowing it to take control of our families? We're going to talk about that in just a little bit with some of our friends from around the Synod, actually, a couple of gentlemen who are going to help us take a look at some apps and resources that are helpful for families. Hope you can join us for that conversation here in just a little bit. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Click on that, and that'll take you to their page. You can find out all about Concordia University, Wisconsin, and the places they're located, not just in Wisconsin. They have sites all over the place, so go check it out at kfuo.org in the sponsor section. Joining us by phone this morning, Seth Hines. He's assistant to the president of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, Michigan District, in web and media director. Good morning, Seth.
Good morning, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks. Thanks for taking time to talk with us this morning. Looking forward to our chat about apps and other resources that are useful tools for families to help families be faithful in all that we're given to be.
Very good. Glad to be here.
Reverend Bill Johnson from Concordia Theological Seminary, Director of Educational Technology there in at CTS in Fort Wayne. Reverend Johnson, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you with us, and look forward to our conversation today. Seth, tell us about your background, your education, your background, and how you ended up in the position of web and media director there in the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, Michigan District.
Sure. I went to Concordia University, Ann Arbor, and studied business and communication at the college. And then my first job, I was kind of working there as a student in the marketing department. My first job out of college was in the marketing field, and was kind of coming along at the same time that Facebook started and Twitter started and all that. So I kind of just picked up as we went. And I was there for about 2.5 years. And then the position at the Michigan District got created called Web Media Director. And I decided to put my name in and then got hired and have been here for about 4.5 years now.
And what does that work of web and media director entail? I can picture in my mind what I think it entails, but help our listeners understand.
Sure, that's a great question. I'm discovering that every day, what that means, to be honest. I have kind of the awesome job of, we have about 380 churches in Michigan here in the LCMS, and I get to work with each one along with schools and kind of discover the new tools that are coming out and how do we use them effectively as churches and as schools and as ministries in Michigan. And so I help our organization, the offices up here, but then I also get to consult and work with schools and churches. So.
Well, very good. And Bill, tell us about your work, how you ended up in the position of director of Educational Technology at Concordia Theological Seminary and your background.
Sure. Well, I graduated in 2001 from another unnamed seminary, much closer to your studio, Concordia St. Louis. I've had great time on both campuses, and they're both such wonderful seminaries, so happy to be where I am. I served outside of Atlanta for a few years, 6 years, I guess, after graduating in 2001, and in 2007 received the call to come to CTS to begin working with distance education. And over time, of course, distance education has developed, but so has a lot of my role here. And it's become not just technology used in putting courses online, though that's still part of it, but how do we use technology in the classroom and how do we teach effectively using technology, not just teaching here, but then equipping our students to go out and teach in the parish as well.
So technology, it sounds like in both of your positions, technology is certainly used for the sake of teaching God's word, for supporting us in the many vocations that we have. Would that be a fair assessment, Seth?
Yeah, absolutely. How do we use it to reach the audiences that we're trying to get to? How do we talk to our people, but also to the community? I think that's a huge part of it.
Bill, your thoughts as where technology fits in this picture of the world that God has created us and the vocations he's given us?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one more piece that we can use to help share the gospel. Mark Prinsky does some great work in teaching, kind of separating out nouns and verbs. And basically what he says is that the verbs that we do remain the same. And I think that's true of the church as well. We still teach, we still reach, we still care. All the things the church has always done. Technology just provides us with some new nouns to do that with.
How can technology get in the way of our vocations, especially when it comes to faithful family life, vocation of parents and parenting and husband and wife? How can technology get in the way of that, Bill?
Well, I think anytime the technology becomes the focus, you start to run into that danger. I know we see it in ministry terms a lot of times when, you know, a new technology comes out and everybody's rushing to really make sure they get on board with this without first asking, is this the best tool for the message and the audience that we're dealing with? In terms of the family, of course, then it can become sort of a substitute for communication. I know one of the things we do in my family, I've got two teenage girls and one that is absolutely convinced she's already a teenager. And, you know, so Sunday dinners, the rule is zero technology. And that bothers me as much as it does them. I'm as guilty as they are sometimes. But it means the phones go off, the tablets go off, and we just sit and have a meal together. And it is so vitally important to unplug at those times.
Why is it important for you to have that family meal without technology? Why is it so important to you and for your family?
Well, because when you're connected to the technology, you're just that. You're connected. You're talking with friends. You're looking on Facebook. You're still present where you are, but you're also kind of dividing your time. You're multitasking and interacting. And that time just as a family, to be together and to just interact with one another, is so very important. And it's something that in the pace of our modern life and with the connectedness we have with technology, we really miss out on. And so forcing it is really just such a healthy thing for us.
Seth, your thoughts?
Sure. You know, I am a parent of two young kids right now, two boys. And, you know, for us, I don't think anybody listening or, you know, us talking here hasn't been in a situation where we sit down with friends and family, maybe at a reunion or Thanksgiving or something, and nobody's talking because they're all staring at their phones. I think it's a huge problem. It can get in the way because you scan Facebook for 2 seconds and you end up there for 10 minutes. it's so easy to let it distract you. It can also, you can overcomplicate things very easily. When we get into talking about calendars and organizations and different ways to kind of keep your family on track, you know, adding in tools can easily replace what could have been done with a simple conversation, you know. So say my wife and I have a event coming up on Saturday, and she puts it on the calendar, and I never see it for whatever chance, you know, it comes to be Friday night or Saturday morning, and she says, all right, you ready to go, that kind of thing? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, I never saw it. Well, I put it on the calendar. And what could have been handled, you know, on Tuesday with me telling her or her telling me, you know, we have this thing coming up on Saturday, has been kind of taken over by, well, we use technology to communicate those little things now. And so we can overcomplicate the simple things when it comes to technology. And now talking about my boys, it's, you know, technology can get in the way. They're not yet at the age where they're picking up iPads or their Kindles yet or anything like that. But how do we model what good, responsible electronic use looks like? So when I'm sitting at home and it's, you know, I'm winding down and, you know, if I find myself on my phone instead of spending time with my boys, then, you know, what is that showing to them and where I put my values and where I put my time? So it can get away, get in front of you, and you just got to be aware of yourself, but also keep things simple.
You bring up a good point. My wife and I have a one-year-old, and you know, when over the last year, giving him bottles and things like that as he's winding down, sometimes I want to spend time looking on Facebook, you know, on my phone or on my iPad, and
yep,
and just reading on that, and then I realized, you know, maybe I should, even though it's quiet time and he's probably going to fall asleep, maybe I should give him a little more attention rather than just using that time to always be on technology and always be connected. Just enjoy the moments that I have to sit there with him and to hold him and just to be, you know, in one another's company.
Absolutely. I mean, that's right on. I found myself, and I have to, you know, pull back because I'll have my phone in front of my face, and then I move my phone, you know, a foot to the right, and there's my kid looking at me. And, you know, we just need to be more self-aware of what's going on, and I'm probably most guilty.
You know? I'm right there with you. I'm just as guilty, but I don't want my son to grow up thinking that my phone or my iPad or whatever technology is literally attached to me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Or that it is more important than a meaningful relationship with him, or, mm-hmm. you know, than having a conversation with him. So I certainly want him to know that he is important to me. Well, let's get into some things that are useful in technology. We've talked about how to try to avoid it taking over, how to avoid it being a nuisance, but how can it be useful? What are some things that you all have used to help you in faithful family life, whether it be things, apps or technology that's useful for teaching the faith, for keeping the family organized, for keeping the family safe? What are some things that you all have used that are helpful? Let's start with things that might be helpful for families with young children. Since, Seth, you have young children, anything, any apps or anything that you'd like to recommend, some things that you'd like to take a look at?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I talked about calendars and how mm-hmm. it can kind of replace Simplicity. But honestly, it is big. It's very helpful to have a Google Calendar where my wife and I can go and add events. And it's a free tool for anybody with a Google account where you can go in and just start adding things to a calendar. So we organize our entire life by that. So any birthdays coming up or baptism memorials or anything like that, we just add it to the calendar so that we know, okay, we've got a birthday celebration coming up, and then she sends it to my work email too, and so I'm always aware of what's kind of going on. So Google Calendars has been very helpful for that. There's an app called Cozy, C-O-Z-I, mm-hmm. That my wife and I have started using. And you can import your Google Calendars to that. But it's also very helpful in that you can organize grocery lists. You can be plugging in those and share those on your account.
Mm-hmm.
So always keeping each other up to date with what we need to add. So it's not, you know, pen and paper at home anymore, but it's, oh, I thought of something at work, and I can add it there, and it goes to the shared calendar. Cozy also allows you to kind of organize your calendars, like I said, but then also your contacts, so you have shared contacts there. And then also the to-do list, which is...
The honey-do list.
The honey-do list is always there. And so it's exciting, well, for my wife. she gets to add things there, and it always keeps it top of mind for me. And, you know, in, you know, kind of partnership with her and, you know, our relationship, I've added that widget to my homepage. Anytime I bring up my phone, I can see if anything's been added, or I can see that kind of daunting list that's still there. But that's kind of a way that's helped us stay organized. So Cozy, C-O-Z-I, is just a great app, and there's free versions, and there's also paid versions that give you a little bit more feature set.
Now, my wife and I do use Google Calendar. We share a Google Calendar, we each have a Google Calendar, and we share each of those so that we can see them from each other's phones, and we can make or from, you know, from our computers or other devices, and make changes or updates to them. And occasionally we encounter some of those conversations like you mentioned earlier, or experience, you know, situations like you mentioned earlier, the something's on the calendar, but we forgot to talk about it earlier in the week. And so the event rolls around. Oops.
Yeah.
We forgot that we have this going on, or forgot to talk about it in advance in order to prepare for it. But by all means, it certainly has been, I think, more helpful than just having a paper calendar on the fridge at home or some other place. It helps us know then when we're trying to plan for other things, if we're free for that, you know, and we always try to check with each other before we commit to something, but it helps eliminate 10 questions along the way of whether or not we're available for something, you know, for an event in the near future if someone invites us to something.
Absolutely. And I've also heard some people set up Google Calendars on a shared account for each individual person in the family.
Mm-hmm.
So at a moment's notice, you can go see what, you know, Bill is up to, or, you know, Sharon, you know, what do they have going on individually,
sure.
and then highlight them over each other, overlay them so you can see how everybody looks at the same time. So that's just one thing to think about.
Speaking of calendars and looking at multiple people's calendars or sharing those calendars, Bill, what in terms of calendars, what do you all do in the Johnson family?
You know, we're an awful lot like Seth's family. My wife and I maintain separate Google calendars, and I actually keep a couple, one for home and one for work, but then we share all of that. And so at a glance, I can see kind of what's coming up this week and when the doctor's appointments are and when the meetings are and everything else, and we can figure out, you know, who's going where and when, which is always a challenge, of course, with older kids. So it really works well, and I don't know that I can say enough good about it.
One of the things that I like about Google Calendar is most devices will allow you to color code it, color code each calendar. So like you said, you have one for work and one for home, and your wife has one, so that they're color coded. You can tell what is what on the calendar, which I find helpful. Sometimes there are so many things on the calendar in so many different colors that it looks like a work of art.
I know that feeling.
Calendar sure looks full this week. Then you step back and realize not all of them are things that are directly related to you. They might be work things, but not necessarily things that involve you or something going on at church that may or may not involve you. But I like to have them all on the calendar so I know what's going on. So I find that helpful. So Google Calendar is one thing that is probably one of the easiest and free apps that are free resources. You can find that on it's in the whole host of Google services. Is that right, Seth?
Yeah, that's right. Yep, along with everything else, so it's all tied in.
So you just set up a Google account online, and you can set up a Google Calendar, and you can have multiple calendars within that. And it's pretty easy to share, just a few steps to share those with someone else, with other family members. We've done that. We've been using it for probably, we've been married 7 years now, and we've probably been using it close to 6 or 7 years, I bet. Yeah, it's been around for a while. Other things, Google Calendar, Cozy, you mentioned. We used Cozy for a little while in our family. We weren't quick adopters, we didn't adopt it very, very easily. I'm not sure why. What didn't work for us? But we still use Google Calendar quite a bit. I liked some of the features on Cozy, but I think everybody has to. It has to work well on your platform, and. I don't know why it didn't work. What is it particularly that I know, Seth, you mentioned that your wife likes the to-do list. Is there something particularly about it that you really like?
About Cozy?
Yes.
I think it's just we have one shared account.
Mm-hmm.
We can import the calendar, and it just ties everything together. I hear what you're saying with those apps, because you can kind of do it as an add-on to what you're doing with Google Calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find yourself in Google Calendar more, and then you never go back to Cozy. And I've been there. I think we've tried Cozy maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and we didn't get into it. But more recently, probably within the last 2 months, we started back up just to keep everything on track. But you really have to kind of dive into it and use it. Otherwise, it'll just kind of putter out. If you're going to do something, fully commit to it. Otherwise, you'll just be hopping from to-do list to to-do list and trying out different apps.
Sure.
So everything kind of does the same stuff. Like you could use Remember the Milk is a popular
I've heard of that one.
App that's free to use. There's plenty other ones, too, that you could try. But unless you, dive into it completely and just go for it, you're just not going to use it.
So right.
That's tough.
Other apps or resources that you found helpful for your family with young children?
With Android, we're an Android family. So, hopefully that's okay. We're a mixed marriage. Okay, still recovering. we're an Android family. We got the new phone, and then it comes with a kids mode now.
Uh-huh.
And so we can. If my son needs to play a game, something, you can pull up kids mode, so you can only get to approved apps that he can play with. So you can just bring up kids mode, and then we've approved different apps like the Bible for kids. There's also a few games where you can just draw with your finger.
Mm-hmm.
And then he can't get into anything. He can't get out of kids mode without the password. So that gives us, you know, kind of the freedom to say, hey, you can, you know, be on this, you know, for the next 10 minutes, and we don't have to worry about him changing all our passwords.
Or deleting all your
somewhere. Yeah.
Deleting all your contacts or texting exactly. Everybody at 3 in the morning on the other side of the world.
For us.
So kids mode on your phone is certainly a helpful tool to allow them to, like you said, just for 10 minutes play or use it for like you said, Bible for Kids. We have to look up what the Bible app is that we use on our iPad. Is there a particular Bible app that you like for kids?
Honestly, it's where we're at right now since they're not reading.
Mm-hmm.
Bible for Kids does a little animation, and it does voiceovers for the Bible stories. So you can kind of go through it in story mode that way. I mean, personally, my wife and I, we use YouVersion.
Sure.
And I think Bible for Kids is a product of that company. So it's all kind of tied in. So Bible for Kids is kind of a cool little go through the story, earn stars, and track your progress as you go. And so it's kind of fun for them, and it's also fun to see it, like where they've been using it and what they've been kind of reading and following along with.
And that's from the YouVersion as well. We have that as well. And even our one-year-old, even though he's still learning to interact with the world around him, he kind of taps at the screen on the iPad for that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, same boat here.
Bill, other apps that help your family stay organized?
Well, one of the biggest things that I run into is, you know, with such busy schedules, mm-hmm. figuring out who's where at any given time. And the location tracking programs that are out there can really be useful for just a quick glance at seeing what's going on. And they're also occasionally useful for locating phones that have a life of their own and wander off. But, like on the Apple platform, you have Find My iPhone, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But on the Android platform, I actually wasn't aware of this till a couple months ago, there's a Google Device Manager app that's not typically bundled into Android, but you can find it on the Play Store, that'll allow you to locate any device that's associated with your Google account.
Hmm.
And, yeah, you can add a, you know, play a ringtone on it at full volume just in case the phone ever gets lost in the house, which never happens in our house, let me tell you. But also, you know, if the phone really is lost, you can wipe the personal info off it. You know, a lot of these security things that are just a good idea, particularly when you have teenagers with cell phones.
Now, is that strictly an Android app, or can that be used on other platforms as well?
That's just on Android, but on the Apple platform, Find My iPhone duplicates a lot of those features, and you can debate which one came first. I'll let somebody correct me on that, but either way, on both platforms, you've got that. I don't know about on the Windows Phone platform. I'm not sure if anybody actually uses that. So.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we're a mixed marriage. I am an iPhone user, and my wife is an Android user. We both were Android users for a while, and I finally came over to the iPhone not too long ago. But I'm an old school, like the free iPhone. So it was one of the older ones, the iPhone 4S, and I like it. And I'm not an early adopter with when there's an update to the software. I wait for everybody else to work out the bugs. And I know people laugh at me for it, but
no, you know, it's a good thing lately. Apple just had one that didn't go real well. So
right.
Good call.
It seems like every time there's an update on software, you know, when the latest update comes out, doesn't matter who it is, when the latest update comes out, there are always bugs to work out. So I just wait till everybody else does that. And then once they figured it out and they've got all the patches and fixed all those bugs, or most of them at least, then I'll install the latest update.
Yeah, that's a good way to go for sure.
Well, we use locating app that we use is called Life 360. We've used that, and that works on both platforms fairly well. From time to time, we've had a little trouble on the Android platform, and it might not necessarily be the Android itself; it might just be my wife's particular phone. Every once in a while, it disconnects from the service, and I can't find her. But but otherwise, it works quite well. You can set up alerts on that, so she can tell when I'm leaving work or when I'm you know, getting close to home or things like that, it's kind of nifty so that we have a better track, especially when trying to keep track of picking up our son or dropping off our son at the babysitter, those types of things. It's been quite handy so that when the other one, one of us is at home preparing dinner, then we have a better idea of when the other, you know, when the other person's going to be home. So that's kind of nice to have those little alerts. Can you do that on any of the other apps? Can you set up an alert when someone like arrives at a certain point?
I don't know that you can on the apps I mentioned. We tried Life 360 for a little while, but we ran into exactly the same problem on the Android platform where the phones just weren't staying connected. Now, this has been months ago, so I don't know where they're at now, but that's the reason we stepped away from it. But I do like kind of the location gating where I could get information when the girls are home, that kind of thing.
We used to use Google, I don't remember what it was called, back before Google Plus really took off, and we used that for locating each other, and that would update pretty frequently. And then I think when Google Plus really took off, then that app disappeared and was and became part of Google Plus.
Yeah, they had Google Locate for a while, I think it was, and then they've rolled that into Google Plus / Google Maps, and it's still there in Android, but it's so many layers down, and there's so many privacy settings that you have to opt into that it's really difficult to get it to work the way you want it to.
Yeah, it takes a lot of steps, and I think that was part of the challenge for us. So we ended up finding Life 360. It's worked okay for us. I don't know if I wouldn't give it 5 stars, but it certainly has been helpful for us when, you know, knowing when someone's coming or going, that is quite helpful, especially with the whole baby and babysitter situation. Now, the free version only gives you so many locations that you can set up for alerts, but you can, I think you can pay a monthly subscription and it'll allow you to add more locations and more alerts and that sort of thing. We are talking about tools, apps, and tools that can be helpful for the family and living out our vocations as families. We're talking with Seth Hines, Assistant to the President of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Michigan District, Web and Media Director, and Reverend Bill Johnson, Director of Educational Technology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. We need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue our conversation. Stick around for more Faith and Family right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration and action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
If you don't think health care rationing will be a central part of Obamacare, listen up. Ezekiel Emanuel has the president's ear and is one of the kingpins behind Obamacare. He recently said in the press that we should die at the age of 75. According to him, it's then that we have no creativity and ability to contribute to society. We become feeble, ineffectual, and pathetic. This, my friends, is the quality of life ethic in action. Mr. Emanuel's expressing the value system and blueprint of Obamacare. The issue we'll face at 75 isn't whether or not to reject certain care. It'll be that you're unable to get care. Emmanuel says if he changes his mind when he turns 75, it'll prove he's still creative and deserving to live. What a tragic way to live.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Andy Bates. I invite you to join me weekdays at 10 a.m. for Faith and Family, where we talk with experts and everyday people about topics pertinent to faithful family life. Weekdays at 10 a.m. on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news, underwritten by Concordia University, Wisconsin.
You've discovered Worldwide KFUO, a radio station where you can find the clear biblical understanding of Christianity proclaimed daily in both word and song. Our talk programs can be heard live or on demand at your convenience anytime worldwide. The KFUO talk programs proclaim the true Word of God, focused on salvation through Christ and Scripture alone. You've discovered KFUO.org, the messenger of good news.
Join the Lutheran Elementary School Association for the second annual Brew in the Loo Festival on Saturday, October 18th at Kohlberg Hall at Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Brew in the Loo will feature food and beverage sampling, live German music, dancers, arts and crafts, and much more. For information, you can call area code 314-268-1525. That's to purchase your wristband, or also visit their webpage, lesastl.org. That's lesastl.org.
Facebook is one of the biggest social media instruments for checking out what is going on with Worldwide KFUO. On our Facebook page, facebook.com/KFUO radio, you'll see us posting pictures, online videos, show information, as well as reviews and previews of events at KFUO. Worldwide KFUO, we are where you are, on Facebook at facebook.com/KFUO radio. The worldwide leader of confessional Lutheranism, Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
KFUO embracing today's technologies to bring the good news message of Christ to the world. Listening to Worldwide KFUO on the go with your smartphone doesn't mean you have to walk around with earbuds all day. You can Bluetooth or sync up to listen in your car while driving anywhere. There are many easy ways to listen to WorldwideKFUO.org. On the air, online, and on demand, the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Today we are talking with Seth Hines. He is the assistant to the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Michigan District, web and media director there, and the Reverend Bill Johnson, director of educational technology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. We're talking about apps and other tools that are helpful for families so that we can be faithful in our vocations as families, to help us with some of those daily things and help us do what we are given to do, to be parents, to be families. And so we've been talking about, before we went to break, we were talking about Google Calendar and location tracking device or apps that help us keep track of things, because phones never get lost in households, right?
Right.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, we lose phones every once in a while in our household, too, or other devices, Kindles, iPads, things like that. So, yeah, try to keep track of those, and having apps like that is pretty handy. On more than one occasion, I've had to use the Find My Device on the Apple side of things. What about software? Seth, you mentioned the Bible for Kids as some software. Bill, any software or any apps that you find helpful in terms of Bible or Bible study or other resources that help us with studying God's Word or catechesis or anything like that?
No, absolutely. There's so many great apps and websites out there. I mean, for just personal use, I just have the ESV on my Kindle. I picked it up actually before the Lutheran Study Bible version came out, but that might be a better way to go today. But in terms of websites, that kind of thing, if you've got a subscription to the Logos platform, then their app is wonderful. Not as much for kids, but definitely on an adult level. Bible Gateway is a great option for comparing multiple translations, that kind of thing. For the pastors in the audience, greattreasures.org is one of my favorite sites, because it lets you move past, you know, the English versions and start to dig into the original languages. And so you can start to really see that and have that, and you can take notes and do a lot of the things that YouVersion is allowing, but you're able to do it with the original languages as well.
And Bible Gateway does have the Greek New Testament. I'm not a Hebrew student, so I haven't looked to see if there's a Hebrew on Bible Gateway, but I've used Bible Gateway for Greek. As a matter of fact, I use it on a daily basis. I use ESV, God's Word, and the Greek New Testament. And I like that it allows you to pull them up parallel.
Right. Now, yeah, absolutely.
The only downside is it doesn't scroll parallel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it doesn't link up. Well, they're not linked I don't know. There must be a feature. I don't know how to find it. But so that if you're looking at verse 7 in the ESV, it doesn't automatically scroll or keep everything else line by line next to each other, so that I could look to the right and there's automatically, you know, verse 7 in the Greek as well. Sometimes there are a few lines off.
Yeah, Great Treasures does do that. I typically use Bible Gateway for kind of a quick lookup and then, you know, multiple versions. It's real easy to see that. I haven't tried the side-by-side scrolling with that.
What if you have a device that doesn't have a lot of memory and you want something like an ESV Bible app?
Well, then your best way to go is rather than going with an app, to actually just use your web browser and go to Bible Gateway's mobile site, or I think it's esvbible.org is the actual ESV site. Both are very solid and have great mobile versions.
Very good. So there are all kinds of apps and resources available for studying the Bible. Any other resources that you find helpful for study? You mentioned Logos for those who have access to that library. That's kind of a, if it's ever been published and it's theological in nature, then Logos probably has it, correct?
No doubt. Absolutely. So now in terms of my own stuff, really the other piece that I use a lot of is Tufts University has what they call the Perseus Project, which is a set of Greek lexicons where I can take the words out of the Greek, you know, paste them in there. My typing in Greek isn't what it ought to be. And from there, I can get three or four different lexicons as well as a lot of the extra biblical uses of the words. So for doing word study and really drilling down, it's amazing for preparing sermons.
Well, very good. So for those pastors who are studying Greek or anyone else who might be using the original languages when studying God's Word, having resources like that are pretty nifty. In terms of other apps or things that might be useful, what are some other areas in life that you found apps or other tools to be helpful? Bill?
Well, I think probably the biggest one for me is all of the social media apps that are out there. I mean, teenagers in particular, but I think a lot of kids live and breathe on social media. It's a part of their communication spectrum. They talk to their friends at school. They go home and hop on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, and they're communicating there. And one of the key things for me is learning to listen where they're talking. And for me, that looks like I'm on Facebook with them, I'm on Tumblr, I'm on a lot of these social networks right alongside them, and I'm staying engaged, not just in interacting with them, but in seeing what they're posting and listening to what they're saying. And I can't tell you how many really positive conversations have happened in our house because I've seen, you know, one girl or the other posting something, and I've gone down and just knocked on her door and said, okay, hey, what's going on here? I see you saying this. Something's obviously up. Talk to me and let me know what's going on.
So that can open conversations, and so what happens on Facebook can lead to face-to-face conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I mean, that's just a good principle anyway. Mm-hmm. If it's a private matter or a sensitive matter, you know, even if they're throwing it out there on Facebook, don't deal with it there. Go and deal face-to-face. Keep that inside the house. And really, so much of the human care that we do as parents takes place, you know, in that face-to-face world.
So social media is certainly something that's this generation is growing up with. You know, we didn't have it until, you know, for me, I didn't deal with social media until I was out of college, really. There wasn't, we didn't know what an app was until well out of college. And, you know, we had email while I was in college. It just started to take off and become more of a public, you know, something that the public used more readily. But, so social media is something that I think this generation is just kind of growing up with. How do you, obviously you monitor it and keep track of what your kids are doing on social media. Where do you even begin with figuring out where this fits in life and worldview for this next generation?
Well, I think the biggest thing is to realize that it isn't new to them. Mm-hmm. Like you said, for you and I, we've kind of grown up, and this has come into being, you know, right about the time we're leaving college and getting into the workforce. And So that it's out there, but we're not really enmeshed in it.
Mm-hmm.
For this younger generation, they've never known a day, practically speaking, when Facebook didn't exist. You know, and so it's always been around, and it's not really a unique or different way to communicate. It's just a part of how they relate to the world. You know, for them, email is something that old people do, and Facebook is the social network I use to keep up with where mom and dad are a lot of times. And we're even seeing a lot of teenagers moving away from Facebook and starting to focus on other social networks, in part to get away from parents and to have a little privacy, and in part because Facebook is just so mainstream that we've got to do something different because that's what teenagers do. So,
what about teens and Twitter? Are teens using, in your opinion, are teens using Twitter?
More so than adults. Twitter is huge internationally. It is still catching on here in America. It's growing, but we're really not at that same level of use that we're seeing overseas. What I'm seeing a lot of with teenagers is a lot of using Instagram. That's replaced Facebook. A lot of using Vine. Of course, Twitter's, you know, short video format, and that's probably Twitter's best way in to work with kids. Tumblr is huge. That's one that not as many people know about, but it's a media-focused social network. I'm seeing a lot in the news about Snapchat, which, of course, the idea there is that it's disposable pictures. You send a picture with a message, and after the person views it, it's immediately destroyed. And that has a lot of attractiveness in terms of the privacy that it offers, but on some levels, it's almost a false promise because nothing that's digitally stored is ever really gone. And we've seen a number of situations where people have had things hacked and previously private Snapchats have been put out there publicly. So that's a conversation that I've had to have with my kids just very honestly and very frankly, that what they have to monitor what they're putting online and how they're presenting themselves. And there's so many elements to that. I mean, gosh, we could talk for hours about that one.
And we're going to actually talk about that more in depth tomorrow with Luke Gilkerson from Covenant Eyes about safety and things like that online. So we'll have a little bit more in-depth conversation. But are any tips or anything or any resources that you'd like to point us to when it comes to safety for teens or even for other family members online?
You know, the biggest thing, quite honestly, is for us as parents to be involved and be on there. It's one of the conversations I had early on when my girls got their phones, is understand that this is my phone and you're using it. And at any time I want to, I can sit down and go through your text messages and have a look. And most of the time I don't actually do that, but every so often we'll peek through and just see how we're using it. And if there's concerns, then I'll say something. But by and large, it hasn't been an issue for us. But there's just simply no amount of software or guidelines, anything else, that can replace actually being there and being present and being involved as a parent.
Seth, anything that you'd like to add to this conversation about safety and being wise with mobile technology and being online?
Yeah, absolutely. There are some important things that you can do as parents, and you're already talking about it tomorrow with Covenant Eyes. That's some great software that you can implement just to kind of monitor what's going on, get reports back from what sites people are visiting and where your teens are headed, but also other family members. And it helps keep people accountable. Also, we've had some pastors up here that have actually kind of developed a contract that they use with their kids. So what Bill's saying about it being open and honest, they've actually, you know, formulated that into a contract that they sign. So it's like, it's almost a family covenant. Like, this is what we're doing, and this is why we're doing it, and we're all agreeing to it. I don't know if you need to go to that length, but it certainly helps at least have the conversation, put something down on the table and say, let's talk. So that's huge. I think just being aware, being aware of the passwords that your kids are using, so you can have access to that all the time, and then checking up on those passwords to see if they're actually the same. I think you have to, your kids need to agree with you that you can have access into their accounts at any time. I think that's just where you need to be as a parent. And then, I mean, simple things like stepping outside of social media for a second, just like make sure your contact lists are up to date. there's a little thing you can put in your contact list for your in case of emergency. Most phones are doing it now. Just say ICE or your parents' names or before anybody else that somebody should call in case of emergency and they find your phone, that kind of thing.
In terms of safety online, when it comes to social media and other online activity, what I hear you both saying is there's no app or any resource that can replace simply being aware of what your children are doing and saying online, who they're interacting with, monitoring that, knowing the passwords, and having conversations, communicating face-to-face about the mobile device they have and their online activity.
Yeah, absolutely true. And it's all the more true when you got teenagers. I mean, we're in that weird transition that happens where you're moving from being the parent who's kind of running things to the parent who's coming alongside and starting to guide them, and they're making their own decisions and being more independent. And, you know, we want that to happen. That's exactly how life should go. But part of that means that even in the realm of social media, we're moving from here's the rules, don't disobey, to, okay, are you being wise with how you're using this? Is this a positive relationship? Is this a godly way of dealing with the world? You know, what can you do to make sure you're keeping yourself in line, and how can I guide you in that process?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, in terms of other apps or tools that might be useful to your family, Seth, were there any other apps or tools or resources that you'd like to point us to? Any other areas? I know we've covered we've covered a number of things, calendars and other things to help us be organized, and Bible software or Bible apps. Any other areas that you'd like to cover that we haven't talked about yet?
Absolutely. When we talk about entertainment and we talk about safe, you know, avenues of that for your kids. Obviously, there are when you have Netflix or something in your house, anything can be kind of stumbled into.
Mm-hmm.
So what we will do as a family is use a resource like PluggedIn.com, where you can go to IMDb.com, the Internet Movie Database, also has parental guides. But PluggedIn will go and analyze each movie that's in the theater right now, and they draw out the positive elements, the spiritual content, the sexual content, the violent content, language, drug and alcohol content, and also the other negative elements, while also providing you with a summary of what the story is. So as a moviegoer, you kind of lose that mystery a little bit about what am I going to watch. But on the safety end, you can feel much more confident about taking your kids to a movie and saying, this is what I know is going to be on the screen. So definitely check out those resources if you're thinking about going out as a family.
Sure. PluggedIn.com. All right. Very good.
PluggedIn.com. There's also Dove, D-O-V-E.org. Mm-hmm. The Dove Foundation does kind of the same work there, and I bet there's others, too, that we haven't talked about. I'll just mention quickly, if you go back to social networks and talk about Pinterest, Pinterest is huge, maybe not so much in the male population, but women are using it all the time to organize their homes, find fun projects that their kids can be doing, and it's just a great place to get ideas for creative things that can keep your kids in a safe place with fun activities where you don't have to, you know, say, let's watch television. You can just look up fun idea for kids, and it'll give you, you know, hundreds of different options. So don't look past Pinterest. I think it's a great resource.
So it's kind of a creative idea-sharing app.
Yeah, well, it's a social network in itself. Mm-hmm. You post a link to anything, and it'll generate a picture if it's got it there. And so it's just a way to kind of organize your life online through boards and pins. And it's great. If you just want to hop in there and search something, it'll just give you 100 ideas, you know, behind, you know, backyard activity, and it'll bring up 100 things that you can do back in your backyard with your kids.
You bring up a good point. Are there apps or tools that your wives use that we haven't talked about that you perhaps maybe don't use?
My wife personally is very into Facebook groups. They have some excellent mother groups that they can talk about all those things behind the privacy of a kind of a closed group. So you can see who's in the group, but you can't see what they're talking about. So there's a solid group of about 1,000 that she's in with, where they just talk about everything from, you know, little babies and caring for them all the way up to, you know, what are some safe websites for my son to head to where they can actually do fun things online? Or, you know, it covers the whole spectrum of what they talk about. And so I think if you can tap into those Facebook groups and connect with other mothers or, you know, dads even, there's some dad life groups where you can say, you know, hold yourselves accountable, be honest with each other. So if you can look for those groups, maybe ask around, ask some of your friends if they know about any groups that they're a part of. Just a good way to stay connected.
Very good. Bill, any other apps or resources that your wife uses that we haven't talked about today that maybe you're not, you know, that you're not using nearly as much as she is?
Well, I think Seth nailed it with Pinterest. That is the huge one among women. One that I've recently started using that my wife is using all the time is Audible.com's app for listening to books. She was kind of doing the mom's taxi service thing.
Yeah.
She would, you know, get through three or four books a lot of times in a month that way, just listening through them. And I've discovered it's a good way to redeem a lot of my drive time as well.
Absolutely. I've been I even use the old school Kindle. I have an old school Kindle that I got a while back as a gift and have just loved it because it has the text to speech feature on it.
Yeah.
And so a lot of books, a lot of publishers allow you to, you know, they leave the rights open for you to use the text to speech feature on, you know, published books. So I'll get them either from the library or buy a book on my Kindle, and it's a computerized voice, but it's not that bad. It doesn't have a lot of inflection to it. It's not like you said, like with Audible, where they have the little more dramatic reading of books. But with a long commute on, you know, from one place to another, I can really crank through a bunch of books in no time. So Audible.com for listening to audiobooks, and Pinterest, a great place to share ideas. Yeah, it's a form of social media. In terms of with just about a minute or so, any that you use for financial matters or anything else that might be helpful, Bill?
We've actually gone down to using cash for most things and good old-fashioned envelopes because it was just simpler. The electronic systems we tried, like EEBA and some of the other apps that are out there for budgeting, and what we found is it was just too easy to miss a transaction and, you know, find out we didn't do it, you know, till the end of the pay period. And so this way, you know, if the money's not in the envelope, guess what? It's not getting bought.
Cash on the barrel, Paul always said.
Exactly.
Seth, any thoughts with just under a minute left?
Sure. There's a few. I'm sure people have seen the commercial for the Walmart Savings Sketcher app. You know, so if you shop at Walmart, get their app and scan your receipt, and it'll show you. It'll actually send you back an e-certificate with the money you could have saved by shopping somewhere else. And then there's Red Laser, which is one of those barcode readers. So you can scan a thing, and it has a nutrition tool as well, so you can scan a product in the grocery store and see, and it'll give you a little rating on whether or not it's healthy even. So you can do price comparison with that, and it's a nutrition tool. And then on my Chrome browser, I always have up this thing called Invisible Hand. It's an extension. So if you're surfing on Amazon looking for a product, it'll scan across the internet and find you maybe 10 other stores where the same product is offered and show you where you can get the best price. Typically, it's Amazon. But
well, nifty. Those are all great resources. Gentlemen, I really appreciate your time today, and I know that the conversation could probably go on with more ideas, but our time is wrapping up. Thank you, Seth Hines, Assistant to the President at the LCMS Michigan District and Web and Media Director. Thanks for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And Reverend Bill Johnson, Director of Educational Technology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. Bill, thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word, study of God's Word right here on listener-supported worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program.
Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.